Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Joining us now is Walter Isaacson. He's the CEO of the Aspen Institute and author of several best-selling books, including Portraits of the Lives of Steve Jobs and Benjamin Franklin. He's been the chairman and CEO of CNN and the managing editor of Time. His 2007 authoritative biography, Einstein, His Life and Universe, is now being reissued to coincide with the premiere of Genius, a scripted television drama airing on Nat Geo, based on the book, starring Academy Award winner Jeffrey Rush as Einstein. The series is based, well, I just said it, it's based on Walter's book. So, Walter Isaacson, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be back with you again, Brian.
So, we'll talk some Einstein, we'll talk some politics. You didn't call your book Genius, but they're calling the series that. Do you like that or recoil from that title a little bit?
You know, I'm writing a book now on Leonardo da Vinci. It comes out in October. And I play with this question of genius. I mean, why do you slap that label on somebody? And with Einstein, it was because he had enormous intellectual processing power. I mean, he's up there with Isaac Newton and maybe one or two other people. The interesting thing about Leonardo da Vinci is he's a more interesting genius to me because he doesn't have that mental processing power. He's not any better than you and I in math. But he just wills himself to be more curious, more observant. And so I think we can sometimes get misled by the slapping of genius on somebody's name.
Where do you put Steve Jobs on that scale? Because I was thinking about these two books, your books on Einstein and Jobs. You spent years of your life between the two of them looking at these two characters. And I was thinking how they were probably two of the most innovative people in the area of science and technology of the last 100 years. But Einstein was almost entirely theoretical, and Jobs was almost entirely applied. And we consider Einstein a saint, and we consider Jobs a sinner.
Well, I don't consider Steve Jobs a sinner, but he is
an
ultimate. No, but he's the ultimate creative innovator, and that's because he connects the arts and the sciences. He connects humanities to technology, and you know he believes that beauty matters. And I don't think that Steve Jobs had the intellectual processing power, that sort of, you know, intellectual genius that a Bill Gates had. But Steve was more creative because he understood that beauty mattered. And with all of his intellectual processing power, out of Bill Gates and Microsoft, you get the Zune, which only you and I remember. And out of Steve Jobs, you get the iPod and then the iPhone. So genius is more than just being smart. You and I know enough smart people. They're a dime a dozen. They don't usually amount to much. It's being creative and imaginative. And that's where Leonardo da Vinci and Steve Jobs pop to the top.
And the executive producer of the Nat Geo series, Brian Glaser, said that one of the most remarkable aspects of this series is that we get to see Einstein fail. So here's a clip from the fourth episode in which we see a young Albert Einstein, played by Johnny Flynn. It's the later Einstein who's played by Jeffrey Rush. This is the Johnny Flynn part. Desperate to be taken seriously by establishment physicists.
Sir, please, just give me 5 minutes. I promise my thesis proposal is unlike anything you've ever heard.
You have 1 minute. 1 minute? Yes. Good. Well, everyone believes that light is a wave, yes? Well, I can prove that when a light ray is propagated from any point, it consists of a finite number of energy quanta which can be produced and absorbed only as complete units. That only took 10 seconds.
You want to argue for your doctoral thesis that we have been mistaken about what has been a fundamental law of physics since 1678? That's
227 years.
Come back when you wish to be taken seriously.
Walter, you're laughing.
Totally, totally true. Johnny Flynn is a great actor, too. He's a good musician. He plays the young Einstein. Totally true. There he is at the Zurich Polytech, and he has come up with quantum theory. Light is both a wave and a particle. And they reject it. They just can't get their minds around it. You said it was an example of Einstein's failure. Not exactly. It turns out to be true. Even though it spooks Einstein, light is both wave and particle.
It took two actors to play. Usually we see, you know, one actor made up to be young, made up to be old. It took two actors to play Einstein in the series.
Well, the young Einstein in the series, the one played by Johnny Flynn, is incredibly, I think this is stretching the truth a little bit much, incredibly sexual and, you know, attractive. And as Jeffrey Rush said, he kind of hoped he could play that part, but he was a little bit too old to play the part of the dashing sexual Lothario, which was young Einstein.
So tell us one story from Einstein's life. You hook his link from obscurity to celebrity, or scientist to celebrity, to the solar eclipse of 1919.
What a wonderful time that was, because Einstein has said, as part of his theory of general relativity, that gravity is simply the curving of the fabric of space. And if that's right, it will curve a light beam to a certain degree. And you'd say, well, let's experiment with that. And you say, well, fine, we'll look at the light from a distant star as it goes by the sun. Well, that's hard to do because the sun gets in your eyes. So they have to wait for an eclipse. And boom, it happens in 1919. He gets a telegram saying, you know, that light has, the sun's gravitational field has bent the light wave just as he predicted. Graduate student says, what would you have felt if it had turned out the other way? And he said, I would have felt sorry for the good Lord, because the theory is correct. And thus, he becomes, right after World War I, a German scientist whose theory has been proven right by a British astronomer. And it makes him up there with Charlie Chaplin as one of the great celebrities.
So maybe we should save this call for your next book interview when you're here to talk about the Da Vinci book you're writing now.
I accept the invitation.
But Miles in Harlem heard something you said about Da Vinci and wants to follow up. Hi, Miles. You're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Good morning to our guests. I'm just wondering, Da Vinci did a lot of copying of other people's work and theory, from the invention of the parachute to the wheelchair and all that kind of stuff. Does that put him in the realm of being a genius? I mean, he did succeed at some point, but he didn't really invent anything, did he?
Well, Leonardo's inventions is what you're talking about. And Leonardo was...
And he said, I think that a little of that was garbled. He said he was talking about his copying of other people's stuff.
Right. Well, that's why the book is there, and I spend a lot of time looking at what his sources were. There's certain things that Leonardo invents, because he's a great engineer, that were totally original to him. But let me say that, you know, whether it's Steve Jobs inventing the graphical user interface, and I use that invention in quotes, or almost any other great innovation, it's all collaborative. It's all built on the backs of others. And I think we make a mistake when we sort of say one person has a light bulb moment and thinks of something that's never been thought of before. So when I'm looking at the unbelievable, beautiful things that Leonardo da Vinci devised, I realize that he has learned many things from other people. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing.
And we can take other calls for Walter Isaacson, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We'll get into a little news. I understand that Walter has interviewed Andrew McCabe, who is now the acting FBI director.
We'll see for how long.
Testifying at this moment on Capitol Hill in what was supposed to be a James Comey hearing. But also Walter Isaacson, besides having been CEO of CNN and managing editor of Time, has written all these amazing biographies, and his one on Einstein, His Life and Universe, originally released in 2007, is now out again because it's being made into that series on Nat Geo, Genius, a scripted television drama starring Academy Award winner Jeffrey Rush for most of the time as Einstein, the young Einstein, being played by Johnny Flynn, as we heard. So I want to play another clip, because part of humanizing an at once legendary figure like Albert Einstein is capturing the all-too-human drama that defined his personal life. And in addition to being a scientific genius, Einstein stumbled through various romantic relationships, including two marriages and several affairs. Mm-hmm. So here's a clip from the first episode in the series in which we see an older Einstein trying to convince Betty Newman, the young niece of a close friend, to move in with him and his second wife and first cousin, Elsa Einstein.
Telegraph, Life magazine, and the Los Angeles Times have all requested interviews. And please, don't forget you invited Minister Ratanau to dinner on Sunday.
Betty, move in with me.
You have a wife.
Whom I adore.
You're insane.
No. I'm quite rational, actually. Monogamy is not natural. It is a construct of religious authority. The foolish faith in authority, my dear Betty, is the first enemy of truth.
Truth being that rules don't apply to you?
I love Mozart and Bach. I love the Swiss Alps and the Baltic Sea. Why can't I love you and Elsa?
For a man who is an expert on the universe, you don't know the first thing about people, do you?
Did that really happen? Did he invite a woman he was in love with to move in with him and his wife?
Well, he'd certainly had a relationship with his secretary, and Elsa was complicated. It was his second – and, well, his cousin in two different ways, and he was always falling in love with different things. I mean, his first wife, as I said, was this great mathematician, good physicist, Mileva Marić. His second wife, Elsa, is his cousin and almost like a domestic partner. They form a home together, but not deeply romantic. And he wanted a deeply romantic relationship with Betty Newman. I think she is right. He did not understand human relations as well as he understood the relations between atoms and electrons.
Was he on record saying monogamy is not natural?
Yes, I think many people have probably used that. I haven't, but maybe other people have used that argument whenever they were falling in love with somebody they shouldn't have. But I think it did show that his genius lay in the physical sciences, not the romantic sciences.
David in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Walter Isaacson. Hi, David.
Yes, Mr. Isaacson?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yeah, we're with you.
Okay. Since Mr. Isaacson, you were head of CNN, I'll make two quick questions.
Real quick.
What do you think is going to happen to Fox News? And secondly, I listen to MSNBC, and I don't find them biased. I find them, especially Ms. Maddow, I find they basically tell the truth, and when they make a mistake, they correct it.
David, thank you very much.
You know, it's interesting. When I was at CNN, it was pretty much the only network. It was before the rise of Fox. And people will argue one way or the other, but we tried to hew very close to just good reporting and not spend a whole lot of time on your opinion. I think there's a downside to this day and age where cable TV news has all become much more driven by talking heads and where you sort of go find the person you agree with, whether it's Maddow or Hannity or, Wolf Blitzer or whatever. There's not much you can do about it, but I wish we were back at a period in which there was more care for the objectivity instead of finding the opinion you agreed with.
Do you have an observation about how CNN is playing it in the era of Trump? They've certainly got more aggressive, Jake Tapper and others, developing a reputation.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now that I've left the cable TV business, I don't pretend to be an expert at it. I do think that I like the good reporting that happens. And I must say the Washington Post and the New York Times have distinguished themselves recently by just doing phenomenal reporting. So this may be, if we can get the business model right, a new golden age of journalism.
Judy in Morristown. You're on WNYC. Hi, Judy.
Hi. So real quickly, my father was a rabbi, and a lot of the sermons in the 50s were about the issues of science and religion, and he met with Einstein very frequently. And I just placed about 15 letters in our historical society from Einstein, but one of them was when my parents invited him to a Seder at our house, and it's a charming letter that turns the invitation down because Einstein said he was a little bit frightened to get too close to the Lord.
Einstein was always very humorous when he had to turn down invitations. Einstein's view of religion is very interesting to me, as, and also his relationship to his Jewish heritage. And I have a whole chapter on that, including a lot of the letters, probably some that you've seen, in which he does believe that there's a spirit manifest in the laws of the universe, in the face of which we must be humbled and awed. And that grand spirit of the beauty of the laws of the universe to him not only has a spiritual quality, but that's what he means when he says the good Lord or God. He does not believe in a personal God that you could pray to and say, can you make the Mets win the World Series? They got to obey the laws of physics, but the fact that God created a universe with such beautiful laws to him was part of the beauty.
Ron Darling, the Mets announcer, was once on the show, and he said he never understands when, after a baseball player hits a home run, let's say, he looks up at the Lord and throws a kiss up to the sky. Does the player think that God hates the pitcher?
Well, I think it probably says more about us and the good Lord that we think when something happens to us, it's because the good Lord wanted us to be happy.
Chandra in Ossining, you're on WNYC with Walter Isaacson. Hi.
Yes, good morning, Brian. My three-year-old granddaughter loves your theme song. She hums and she dances when it comes on. You need some words so she can sing.
That's good. But if you don't watch out, she'll be engaged in the news by the time she's six.
Greetings to Mr. Isaacson. I had heard, it's not being talked about, that McCabe, who is going to be deputy, had met with Ryan Priebus.
Acting FBI director now.
Had met with Ryan Priebus, I think, in December or something, and they had discussed the collusion, and McCabe allegedly told him there was nothing there. I'll hang up and listen for the answer.
Okay. I don't have all the inside of what was told to which people.
You interviewed McCabe.
I interviewed McCabe from last October, I think it was, maybe November.
Okay.
I've interviewed him, and James Comey has been to the Aspen Ideas Festival. I think Andrew McCabe is a straight shooter, a decent guy, a career law enforcement person. So I don't think there's some weird conspiracies. People say, well, his wife knew some Democratic, from Virginia or his whatever. I think these are good people, and I think James Comey was not great at public relations and made a few missteps. But these are honest, honorable people, and we shouldn't try to assume there's some deep, dark conspiracy.
How surprised were you either by the firing of Comey after the praise that Trump had given him over time, and how surprised are you that Trump seems to be surprised by the blowback?
Yeah, I was appalled by the firing of Comey, whatever you may think of Comey, and as I just criticized him some, because it's clear that he's deeply involved in an investigation on what connections there may have been, not necessarily with Mr. Trump, but with, people on the campaign and Russian involvement, as there was in the French election, there was in the U.S. election. So you have this investigation, and it's only in an authoritarian-type regime do you start firing people like that when they're doing an investigation. I do think it would be good now to say, let's put all this to rest, because I don't know if there was any collusion with Trump, and I don't know if Trump knew about it. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. But it'd be nice to get somebody who has some independence or a special investigator or counselor so that we can't think the president of the United States gets to fire people who are investigating him.
Natalie in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Natalie.
Hi. I'm really enjoying Genius. I think it's fantastic. And to your earlier point on religion, I just have to share, I had such a laugh. I think it was the first episode where the Einsteins, or the parents, are leaving to go to Italy. And the mother says to Albert, well, there are two hams left for you, and don't forget to order the milk. And I just thought to myself, well, that's not a very kosher dinner. And I really got a good laugh.
Well, I don't think he ever kept kosher. His, you know, he had what he called a tribal feel for the Jewish people, which grows stronger, of course, with the rise of anti-Semitism. But you have to remember that a family like the Einsteins, when they were in Germany growing up, or when they moved to Italy, they feel that they're assimilated. They feel that they're not something separate, and that theory, of course, is strongly disproved with the rise of the Nazis.
Was he offered the presidency of Israel?
Yes, very much so. He was offered by Abba Ibn, who was then the ambassador to the United Nations in the State of Israel, after, Chaim Weizmann was the first, and Chaim Weizmann had traveled to the U.S. with Einstein. They decide to offer him the presidency. I went and did, that's in my book, because I did a lot of research on that. And Abba Ibn, who I once met and talked to a few times, said, you know, the big question I had to ask my bosses back in Tel Aviv was, what do we do if he accepts? But Einstein was smart enough to say that he was flattered, but that he wasn't going to accept. But he did help start Hebrew University, which is coming up on a big anniversary next year. And I'm a big supporter of Hebrew University because that's where Einstein's papers are.
We have a few people calling in behind the scenes to say, no, Steve Jobs did not invite the graphical interface. I don't know if you want to react to that.
Oh, no, I meant to say that. That's why I said it's in quotes, yeah. Invent. Because what I'm saying is everything was collaborative. So I think it was the caller said that some of what Leonardo did was copying from others.
Yes.
I obviously have a long chapter on the three visits, it really was. Everybody thinks it's one visit where Steve goes to Xerox PARC and is totally blown away by what Alan Kay and others have done with graphical user interfaces. But let's remember, Xerox was never able to execute it. And vision without execution is just hallucination.
And in just 10 seconds, a listener writes, oh, God, we have so many good ones coming in. Einstein founded the IRC, International Rescue Committee, which helps refugees.
And by the way, real quickly, when you donated to it, you wrote the check to Einstein, and then he would endorse it over. So you got a check back with Einstein's signature.
Huh. And someone else says, Einstein, Jobs, Da Vinci, all dyslexic. Do you know that to be true?
I think it's very hard for us historians to do diagnoses from way back of Leonardo's left-handed and writes in mirror script, but he reads very well.
Walter Isaacson's Einstein, His Life and Universe is now made into the Nat Geo series. Genius. Thank you so much.
Brian, just under the wire.